Coming up tonight on Montana Eating Edition, Montana officials will release details on Montana's oil train routes. Good eating, I'm Conrad Scheid.
And I'm Corin Cates Carney, and that's our top story tonight on Montana Evening Edition. And a pilot is killed in a plane crash at Western Montana's Lost Trail ski area.
And forest plans will be updated for the Helena and Lewis and Clark National Forests. Montana officials intend to release details next week on oil trains passing through the state, despite efforts by railroads to keep that information from the public. Andrew Huff, chief legal counsel for Governor Steve Bullock, says that federal officials confirmed the information was not security sensitive. Huff says its release would raise awareness and help protect public safety. U.S. Transportation Secretary Anthony Fox last month ordered railroads to provide specifics on oil train routes, crude volumes, and other information to states following a string of explosive accidents. Railroads say the order covers confidential information that could be misused if it was made public. Washington state officials also intend to release the details next week. Some states have agreed to keep it confidential, while others are still weighing the issue.
A twin-engine plane crashed and caught fire in a parking lot of Western Montana ski area, killing the pilot. Ravalli County Undersheriff Steve Holton says the incident unfolded late yesterday afternoon.
A little bit after 5 p.m., the Ravalli County Dispatch Center started receiving reports of a plane wreck at the Lost Trail ski area. There was actually a plane wreck. It was what we know to be a twin-engine, larger plane than was initially reported, crashed into the parking area of the ski lodge there. The crash and the subsequent fire were very intense, so there's not a lot of the plane left.
Federal Aviation Administration spokesman Alan Kisner says preliminary information indicates the plane was an amphibious Grumman G-21A with the only pilot on board. Undersheriff Steve Holton says they have temporarily identified the pilot but are not releasing his name until they've confirmed it and notified family members. They believe the plane was destined for Hamilton but are unsure where it was flying from. One witness said the plane appeared to be spinning in the air before it came down flat in the parking lot and was destroyed by the fire. National Transportation Safety Board and FAA officials are to investigate.
The Missoula County Coroner's Office says a man whose body was recovered from a sport utility vehicle in the Clark Fork River in Missoula last week died of accidental drowning. Rescue workers pulled 71-year-old Melvin Beadle and his vehicle out of the river on June 11th. Witnesses said they saw Beadle's SUV go over the embankment and into the river near a fast food restaurant a day earlier. The coroner's office released Beadle's cause of death today.
The Custer National Forest has approved Stillwater Mining Company's plan to drill core samples to evaluate whether it's feasible to expand its Stillwater Platinum and Palladium mine to the east. The Beartooth Ranger District on Monday authorized Stillwater Mining to drill at 8 sites in the Beartooth Mountains, above 5 miles southwest of Dean. Drill rigs could be operated at up to 3 locations, and up to 5 drill holes could be drilled at each site. Drill rigs will be operated 24 hours a day, 7 days a week through October. Up to 12 people could be working at the sites. The Forest Service is not authorizing any road building and requires the company to reclaim any areas it disrupts. The Forest Service is not authorized any mining.
The Helena National Forest Service is planning a series of public open house discussions to update the 28-year-old forest plans for the Helena and Lewis and Clark National Forests. A forest plan is a crucial document for the Forest Service because it guides how they'll manage the land and its resources for the foreseeable future. The Forest Service currently maintains a forest plan for each national forest, but has decided to develop one plan to cover all 2 million acres of land. Monday, June 23rd, the Forest Service will use the open house in Helena to provide information on the revision process, the areas of forest to be covered, and resources management. Kathy Bushnell, Public Affairs Officer for the Helena National Forest, says the open house is only the first phase of a long process that will address many of the issues that have developed since the forest plan was last updated in 1986. For example, the mountain pine beetle, a species of insect native to the Helena Forest, has experienced a population surge in the last decade.
In 2005-2006, because of a variety of factors, the population just skyrocketed. And so the mountain pine beetle then attacked these lodgepole and ponderosa pine trees, and now we have significant tree mortality. And about 60% of the Helena National Forest has been infested by this mountain pine beetle. And so it's a significant change in the vegetation conditions.
Changes in technological advances will also be addressed, such as land mapping, as well as updates to reflect current scientific research, particularly in the areas of climate change and wildlife biology. Bushnell says it's important that anyone who recreates or works in these forests should try and attend.
We want to hear from people because, you know, someone might think, you know, I just go hiking in this one area. What kind of difference will my feedback or me showing up to this meeting make? Well, it could make a lot of difference to us because we don't have enough people to go and hike all these areas or go into these areas every time. So our assessment of the current condition is what we're doing now. And so hearing from people on what they've seen, what they consider to be the condition out generally speaking, or specific trail or whatever, is good feedback that we want to know.
This is the first of six meetings planned in Montana cities located around the forests. The open houses will continue in Great Falls, White Sulphur Springs, Lewistown, Billings, and Lincoln. A complete schedule of the open houses, as well as contact information for those unable to attend the meetings, can be found on the Helena National Forest website.
The chairman of the Montana Republican Party predicts the state GOP will emerge united from its platform convention this weekend. Will DeShaw says over 300 Montana Republicans are expected at this weekend's platform convention. That's a biannual meeting in which participants discuss a variety of party and platform issues. Conservative and more moderate Republicans on both statewide and national levels are debating the best course for the party's future. DeShaw suspects the convention will be had in Billings this weekend.
But I think that it's going to make a lot of the media sad because I expect it will come out of this thing fairly unified. There are people that are reaching out to other people, which is a good thing. And I think we're going to find some very strong unifying proposals that will bring us even closer together.
Convention delegates are expected to consider a resolution this weekend that would allow only registered Republicans to vote in Republican primaries.
Oh, I think it's an interesting proposal. I would rather than see a lawsuit or something of that sort, I'd rather leave it up to the legislature and let them make the ultimate decision. I think that's where the laws should come from, and that's what it would be. So it has some pros and cons, but I believe it's a legislature that should probably be involved.
DeShaw says he believes delegates this weekend will continue to discuss and reform issues that he says are of interest to most Montana voters, namely lower taxes, smaller government, and increased personal responsibility.
A Missoula County Sheriff's deputy who accidentally shot himself in the leg during a firearms training exercise west of Helena is recovering and has returned to light duty. Sheriff Carl Ibsen tells the Independent Record that Deputy Jonathan Steinford is a little uncomfortable, but is walking around and doing well. Steinford and other deputies were participating in a live firearms quick draw training exercise at Fort Harrison on May 28th when Steinford's gun accidentally went off while it was holstered. An investigation by the Lewis and Clark County Sheriff's Office said the bullet traveled down Steinford's leg and lodged in the top of his right kneecap, but didn't hit any major blood vessels or nerves.
A judge in northwestern Montana threatened to fine and require letters of apology from nine people who failed to show up when called for jury duty earlier this month. District Judge James Manley said of the 48 Sanders County citizens called, a dozen were excused, another dozen failed to show up, putting the trial in jeopardy. The Missoulian reports Manley ordered the no-shows to appear and explain why they should not be held in contempt of court. Four met with Manley prior to their order to appear and were obligated to write letters of apology. A fifth also satisfied his obligation early. Manley expected the excused three who appeared before him, but found the other four in contempt. He said he would waive the $100 fine if they, too, wrote letters of apology.
The search for a 53-year-old Ronan man suspected of shooting his brother to death over the weekend ended last night when the man was arrested at his residence. Confederated Salish and Kootenai tribal officers received a tip Harry Lizeau was at home, where authorities believe he shot his 51-year-old brother Terry to death on Saturday afternoon. Lake County officials say Harry Lizeau was arrested at about 8 p.m. and jailed in Polson. Yesterday, the state crime lab determined that Terry Lizeau died of a single gunshot wound.
A 19-year-old Great Falls man who was sentenced last week to 60 years in prison for rape has been given a concurrent 60 years after pleading no contest to the raping of a 14-year-old girl when he was 17. The Great Falls Tribune reports District Judge Kenneth Neal yesterday also revoked a probationary sentence he gave Underdahl in 2012 youth court rape case. Neal said Underdahl will be imprisoned in the youth court case until he is 25 before he begins serving the 60-year term. Prosecutors alleged Underdahl raped six girls between the ages of 12 and 14. As part of the case, Underdahl pleaded guilty in March to sexual intercourse without consent. The plea agreement called for a 10-year prison term, but District Judge Greg Pinsky called Underdahl a serial rapist last week before sentencing to 60 years.
A Lake County prosecutor and a defense attorney say they're close to reaching a plea agreement in the case of a Polson man charged with raping his former girlfriend, stalking her, and trying to hire someone to kill her to prevent her from testifying against him. Deputy County Attorney Jessica Cole Hodgkinson told District Judge James Manley today the agreement will cover all the charges against 57-year-old Dennis Hobbs. The Missoulian reports Hobbs' attorney said his client had one concern with the deal that he believed could be quickly addressed. Hobbs was charged last month with solicitation of deliberate homicide, stalking, and tampering with witnesses and informants. He was charged last year with two counts of sexual intercourse without consent and assault after his ex-girlfriend reported Hobbs had raped her in August.
A spring deluge that dumped nearly 5 inches of rain and more than a foot of snow in parts of Glacier National Park has tourists seeking cover and the rivers rising, spilling over their banks from the mountain runoff. The storm has pounded northern Montana over the past 2 days. The National Weather Service issued a flood warning Wednesday for the broad swath of territory from the northern Rocky Mountain front to east of Cut Bank. Glacier spokeswoman Denise German says a winter storm warning will be issued for higher elevations, and more than 14 inches of snow had already fallen at the Sperry Chalet in the park east of Lake McDonald. Forecasters say another 4 to 8 inches of snow are expected to fall at elevations above 6,500 feet. Tourists hunkered down in lodges, snow plows, and crews stood down, and park officials were preparing for possible employee evacuations from the St. Mary area, with rain and snow expected to continue until tomorrow.
And now for tonight's forecast. In Polebridge, it is 55 degrees. In Butte, it's 49. In Conrad, it's 48. And in Thompson Falls, it's 49 degrees. And in Anaconda, it's 46 degrees. West of the Divide tonight, expect some rain and patchy fog with lows in the upper 30s to mid 40s. Thursday will be mostly cloudy with a chance of rain showers and more fog, highs in the 70s. In central Montana, there's a winter storm warning in effect until 6 a.m. tomorrow for elevations above 6,500 feet on the northern Rocky Mountain front. Tonight, rain is likely with snow in the mountains. Low should be from 40 to 45, with wind gusts up to 35 miles per hour. Thursday should bring more clouds and a chance of showers and afternoon thunderstorms, with highs from 65 to 70. In southwest Montana, tonight expect rain and a slight chance of snow after midnight. Lows will be from 35 to 45, and on Thursday, the sky will be mostly cloudy in the morning, with a chance of showers and thunderstorms later in the afternoon, highs 65 to 75. And now for the editorial comments of Mark Hansen.
Few topics in the West stir up controversy more quickly than public lands, those places all Americans own together. The latest headline involves some Utah county commissioner planning an ATV rally on public lands of archaeological importance. While some people see public lands management as federal land grabs and liberty restrictions, others value public ownership as protection for places from private exploitation. But what does it really mean to own these lands? The idea of common ownership of public lands, places managed by the BLM, Forest Service, or other such entity, is a familiar idea deeply rooted in American tradition. Federal claims to the land were initially made to promote the settling of the West, but as that process neared completion, Congress managed public lands for multiple uses. As a result, we've come to think of land very strongly in terms of private versus public ownership. Some people believe that public ownership means the freedom to do whatever anyone wants. But that view ignores a couple important points about ownership. First, ownership is always a matter of degree. If you own a house, you can do pretty much what you want with it, except make it hazardous. So we have building codes to make sure residents and their neighbors have safe houses. If your house is also an historical landmark, you have less freedom because it has some importance to the community. So even with private ownership, how much freedom you have depends on the kind of thing you own, and it almost always comes with at least some responsibilities to others. Public ownership relates to objects of great public importance, and therefore comes with even more restrictions. In fact, as philosopher Judith Andre argues, the general principle is that for the sake of the community, ownership of some things must be limited or even prohibited. Think, for example, how important it is to protect a wilderness area that encompasses a vital watershed. A second point about ownership is that, as Andre writes, quote, property is not a relation between people and an object. It is a relation among people about that object, end quote. So your rights to your house aren't so much about you and your house. They're about how you and other people define what you can and cannot do in relationship to each other about your house. The key point is that ownership actually brings us into community rather than separates us from it. In fact, ownership is based on community. This is especially true with public lands, where the rights and responsibilities of joint ownership have to be negotiated to establish a good relationship among people about the land. That's why collaborative processes behind, for example, the Blackfoot Challenge and the Forest Jobs and Recreation Act are such appropriate models for public lands policymaking. It's also the case, however, that the more we consider the kind of thing that public lands are, especially when it comes to wild places, the more the idea of ownership itself seems out of place. How does ownership apply to towering ponderosa pines, delicate glacier lilies, or a passing elk? Writer Jack Turner suggests that the West has been wounded by particular uses of language, especially the strong dualism of the public versus the private sector. In Turner's words, the world as a collection of resources, property rights, and utility calculations. Thus, the National Forest Service motto is, the land of many uses. With public lands, the so-called objects we own and use are not just other inanimate objects like houses, but often wild places with living creatures with a value of their own in a precious and delicate set of relationships on which we all depend. Ethically, then, ownership is an impoverished way to think about our relationship to the land and even about our relationship to each other about the land. Ethics stems from being members of communities, and our community includes the natural world. As Aldo Leopold writes, quote, a land ethic changes the role of Homo sapiens from conqueror of the land community to plain member and citizen of it. It implies respect for fellow members and also respect for the community as such, end quote. We may need concepts like public and private ownership to negotiate our legal relationships about the land, but we dare not define our relationship with public lands only or even primarily in those terms. To do so is to reduce nature to a world of objects at our disposal, a land of many uses, deserving of no respect other than what meets our fancy. The members of both our human and natural communities deserve better. This is Mark Hansen, guest commentator for the Mansfield Program in Ethics and Public Affairs at the University of Montana.
Mark Hansen is one of several commentators of Montana Evening Edition. The views don't necessarily represent those of this station. If you have a comment, you can send it via our webpage at mtpr.org or on Montana Public Radio's Facebook page. Montana Evening Edition is also archived on our website. I'm Corin Cates Carney.
And I'm Conrad Scheid. Thanks for listening, and please join Edward O'Brien tomorrow at 7, 8, and 8:30 for Montana Morning News.